It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is still fairly low overcast, but it seems like the sun is trying to break through. Out at the airport, they are showing east winds to 7 miles per hour. They are down to 3 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for a 20% chance of rain for today and tonight, and a 30% chance of rain tomorrow. Just a 40% chance of rain on Friday. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak emergency personnel responded to 3 overdoses Monday night. Lots of federal money is set to come into the state to bridge the internet divide in rural communities. And the city of Valdez wants to know what Hillcorp will do, if there's an oil spill. Those stories and more after this.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Wildfire smoke wafting down from Canada is contributing to very poor air quality in the United States today. A haze has settled over multiple states from the Midwest to the South and points east, where extreme heat is also brewing unhealthy air for millions of people. NPR's Joe Hernandez reports.
Residents of Chicago, Detroit, Pittsburgh, and other cities are facing unhealthy air quality levels as wildfire smoke blankets the region. The National Weather Service says similar conditions could continue for a couple of days. Canada has been experiencing its most destructive wildfire season on record, and authorities there have been struggling to contain hundreds of blazes across the country. Experts say people in areas with poor air quality should try to remain indoors as much as possible, wear an N95 mask or similar respirator outside, and avoid strenuous activity. Joe Hernandez, NPR News.
The air quality issues in Chicago did not stop President Biden from delivering a major speech today on his economic policy that the White House is now dubbing Bidenomics. NPR's Deepa Shivaram reports the Democrat stop in Chicago was part of a weeks-long economic tour across the country by administration officials.
Biden touted the country's economic growth since the COVID-19 pandemic and criticized old policies of trickle-down economics, which focused on tax cuts for corporations and the wealthy.
The trickle-down approach failed the middle class. It failed America. It blew up the deficit. It increased inequity. And it weakened our infrastructure.
Biden's agenda, he says, is about investing in the middle class. The latest push from the White House comes as Biden's approval ratings on the economy remain low. In an NPR PBS Marist poll from March, just 38% of Americans say they approve of how the president is handling the economy. Deepa Shivaram, NPR News.
Actor Kevin Spacey's sexual assault trial in Britain has begun. Villa Marx has the latest.
The double Oscar winner had previously pleaded not guilty to a dozen charges involving allegations of sexual assault and indecent assault against 4 men. The judge warned jurors to, quote, avoid media coverage of the trial, with charges dating from 2001 to 2013. During much of that period, Spacey was the artistic director of London's Old Vic Theatre Company.
Villa Marx reporting. A 24-year-old Marine veteran who put a subway rider in a deadly chokehold last month in New York City has pleaded not guilty. Daniel Penny was arraigned today on charges of second-degree manslaughter and criminally negligent homicide for killing Jordan Neely. Penny maintains he did what he did because Neely was a threat to other passengers. According to police, witnesses said Neely was acting erratically and was shouting at other passengers, but that there was no indication that he physically confronted anyone. From Washington, this is NPR News.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Kodiak's police and fire departments responded to three overdoses near the Harbor Master's office in downtown Kodiak on Monday night. All three victims survived. None were residents of Kodiak, according to a spokesperson for the Kodiak Police Department. The spokesperson could not confirm any additional details, citing that a police investigation is ongoing. Anyone can pick up the overdose-reversing drug Narcan from the Kodiak Public Health Center. The health center also distributes opioid emergency kits for businesses, which come with Narcan, fentanyl test strips, and CPR masks. Tips about drug trafficking and activity can be submitted anonymously to the Kodiak Police Department. That number is 486-8000. The state's weather vane scallop fishery opens on Saturday. The harvest levels for the waters around Kodiak is set at 190,000 pounds of shucked meat. That's just over half the entire catch for the whole state. Kodiak's fishery is divided into four sections, and the vast majority of this year's harvest is located in the Shelikof Strait off the island's west side. The state's weather vane scallop fishery stretches from southeast to the Bering Sea. Internet providers in Alaska say federal money coming into the state, including over $1 billion announced on Monday by the Department of Commerce, will go a long way toward helping rural communities bridge the digital divide. This comes as Northwest and North Slope communities continue to struggle with the fallout of a severed fiber optic cable in the Beaufort Sea. Kelly Williams, CEO of OTZ Telephone Co-op in Kotzebue, says federal funding from a previous grant is going toward construction of a network connecting Kotzebue to a fiber optic cable along the Dalton Highway. During a discussion on Talk of Alaska on Tuesday, Williams says he expects that will raise speed, lower costs, and provide a much-needed backup system.
What that will do is bring that redundancy, close that loop, so to speak, so that if the cable was ever cut again, we could bring, you know, backup capacity from the Dalton Highway all the way to all of our villages and to Kotzebue, as well as if it went the other way, do the same thing, or if we lost a link in the middle of that network, feed from both directions.
The funding for that project is just $30 million of the billions coming into the state for broadband infrastructure. Williams says he's cautiously optimistic about the prospects of internet build-out in Alaska, but he says it's important to make sure the money goes to the right communities.
There's a tremendous amount of funding, you know, and it's really our job, and I say our, I mean everyone who's in a leadership position, is to keep our eye on that and try to ensure that those go to the right places and the places that need it the most. I think that's a really important thing, and we have to be vocal about it.
Williams added that he expects to see more conversations over whether internet broadband is a utility and a necessity or a service in regulatory bodies like the FCC in the coming years. The outcome of that debate could dramatically affect the way internet service is handled at every level of government. The city of Valdez went before the Alaska Supreme Court on Tuesday to argue for more transparency from Hillcorp, a privately owned Texas oil and gas company. Hillcorp was not required to make financial disclosures when the company bought BP's Alaska assets in 2019, and government watchdog and climate advocacy groups say that raises concerns about who will pay for a cleanup in the event of an oil spill. Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George has this report.
A crowd of more than 50 people, including members of the Alaska Public Interest Research Group and Fairbanks Climate Action Coalition, rallied in support of Valdez's lawsuit outside Boney Courthouse in Anchorage on Tuesday.
We deserve to know more, and we want no more secrets, no more spills. No more secrets! No more spills! No more secrets!
The lawsuit, originally filed in 2020, argues that the Regulatory Commission of Alaska shouldn't have allowed Hillcorp to keep its financial statements confidential during its $5.6 billion acquisition of BP's Alaska assets. Valdez and its allies say without a clear picture of Hillcorp's financial health, there's no way to know whether the company has the resources to maintain the oil infrastructure it bought or respond to potential oil spills.
Well, we need proof that they are able to clean up after themselves.
Maureen McDonald from Hooper Bay attended the rally with her daughter. She remembers the destruction of the 1989 Exxon Valdez oil spill, and she doesn't trust that oil companies will take full responsibility for the cleanup if something like that happens again.
We want proof because word is worthless.
Phil White is a policy analyst with the Public Interest Research Group. He says while the lawsuit won't change the BP sale, it could have an impact on future oil deals.
So I think this case is really about precedent, right? It's not just about the BP Hillcorp deal. It's about everything that comes after this. It's about what happens when ExxonMobil leaves the state and they sell their assets, right? And so what we want to have happen here is we want the court to very clearly tell the RCA, you cannot permit companies to keep their finances secret based on these kind of obscure provisions.
In court Tuesday, lawyers for Hillcorp, BP, and the RCA didn't directly address the substance of Valdez's argument. They say the city didn't take the correct procedural steps in its complaint. Hillcorp lawyer Anne-Marie Tavella also argued that the city was not specifically harmed by the deal and therefore didn't have standing to make objections to it.
Valdez's argument is hypothetical. It may be adversely affected at some point in the future, depending on what might happen, but that's not factual aggrievement.
Following the hearing, Supreme Court judges are deliberating the case. A final decision could take months. In Anchorage, I'm Kavitha George.
At least two Alaska Department of Corrections staff members have faced charges in recent months for bringing opioid addiction recovery medication into correctional facilities on the Kenai Peninsula. These cases, advocates say, could be evidence of gaps in treatment programs at Alaska prisons and jails, and they say without consistent and long-term treatment options for opioid use disorder, there's a lucrative black market for medication in facilities where rates of substance abuse are disproportionately high. Sabine Pooks reports for KBBI.
In April, a correctional officer was charged for bringing buprenorphine into Spring Creek Correctional Facility in Seward. Earlier this month, a former staff member was charged for distributing Suboxone at Wildwood Pretrial in Kenai. Sarah Spencer says she isn't surprised these cases are coming to light. She's an addiction medicine specialist based in Inilchik, and she says buprenorphine is the gold standard for opioid use treatment today.
There is very few medications that we have in modern medicine that are as effective as this medication is to treat this disorder. It is just incredibly effective.
Buprenorphine is a prescription opioid that treats withdrawal symptoms and reduces cravings. Suboxone is its brand name version. Spencer's Inilchik Clinic offers injections of the drug for patients in recovery. But she says people in Alaska's correctional facilities often can't access buprenorphine or other drugs through in-house treatment programs, even though they're shown to be incredibly effective. Around the U.S., stigma and bureaucracy have kept states from implementing similar treatment programs at their correctional facilities. And that could be why correctional employees and inmates are smuggling those drugs in, and in those recent cases, getting caught. Symptoms of withdrawal can be brutal, including severe nausea and restlessness. And Spencer says going cold turkey can be really painful. She says it's like the worst flu you've ever had, times 10.
It's just incredibly painful in every way you can imagine. And so, of course, there's going to be an enormous black market.
Drug treatment policies vary from facility to facility in Alaska. As it stands, the Department of Corrections says it will bridge patients' medications for up to 30 days. That means inmates with methadone and Suboxone prescriptions, for example, should be able to keep on their treatment plans for a month after they enter the system. But Spencer says that doesn't always happen. She says the state's technically required under the Americans with Disabilities Act to continue incoming inmates on their medication when they enter the system, according to guidelines from 2022. And she says the inconsistent treatments could be a lawsuit waiting to happen. Some state facilities also offer injections of Vivitrol, an opioid antagonist that keeps cravings away, but unlike its counterparts, is not an opioid and does not block symptoms of withdrawal. Spencer says withdrawal is no joke. Symptoms can be so bad that they drive people to suicide. Adam Mahoney of Homer says that's why there's such a big black market for drugs like Suboxone in Alaska's prisons. He started using pills after a motorcycle accident when he was a teenager. After another accident in 2019, he started doing heroin. Last year, he was arrested and sent to Wildwood.
I knew that when I went to jail that I was going to be sick.
He says there was a really high value in Wildwood for smuggled Suboxone, so he brought in his own by swallowing a package of a couple dozen. But the pack exploded in his stomach, and he says he almost died.
It just kind of goes to show the extremes that we'll go to just to maintain adherence. It's really hard in jail to begin with.
Mahoney says he wasn't offered any treatment and went through withdrawal for about 3 weeks in jail. Luckily, when he got out, he was able to connect with Spencer and her team, and he says things are going great for him now. Spencer says she's working with the Department of Corrections to get more consistent systems in place for patients. DOC spokesperson Betsy Holly says the department's in the process now of expanding the treatment services it offers to go beyond 30 days in the case of inmates with existing prescriptions, in addition to starting patients on treatment while they're incarcerated. And some states do already have programs in place. Rhode Island, for example, has been offering medication for addiction treatment programs since 2016 at its prisons and jails. Spencer says the data shows it's working.
We know what works. We know exactly what works. We just need to do it.
She says in a crisis like this one, there's just no time to waste. In Homer, I'm Sabine Pooks.
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, released an updated population estimate for Cook Inlet beluga whales, which offers hope for recovery. Since 1979, the belugas have seen a 75% decline. Historically, their numbers ranged around 1,300. But by 2018, their numbers had dwindled to 279. But this year's count reached 331. As KNBA's Hannah Bissett reports, that's the first increase in decades.
The population estimate for Cook Inlet beluga whales has been delayed since 2018 due to challenges such as the pandemic and weather restrictions. It's finally been conducted this year, providing important information about the current status of this endangered species. There has been a recent positive development as the population has witnessed its first increase in estimation in decades. The population estimate pool has been raised by around 100 whales. According to NOAA biologist Paul Wade, the new development shows that the population is finally stable.
However, when we look back over the 10-year window, because 10 years gives us enough data points to make some sort of conclusive statement, it looks like it actually was declining and then increased, and then overall that evens out to being stable.
This change could be impacted by several factors, including, but not limited to, points of pollution and decreased noise pollution. The actual cause of the median increase is still being studied, as to get an accurate idea, you would need multiple years to showcase the incline. Reagan Davey is a chemist dedicated to advancing research and resources to enhance our understanding of Cook Inlet beluga whales. Davey emphasizes that a decade ago, a list of contaminants of the Cook Inlet was identified. There are hundreds of mixing zones that are approved for the Cook Inlet. However, the tests taken to showcase the pollution in the mixing zones have yet to yield definitive results regarding every impurity found in the area.
What I think would be great is if they did have to test for every contaminant, because then you could directly relate it to a source, but that's not how it goes. So, and they do issue and report what is over the limit. They don't have to test for everything.
Another concern that has come up recently has been the small population of beached whales with incomplete pregnancies with birth defects. But the amount is too small to have conclusive data. The incline of the median still needs to be thoroughly dissected to get a complete picture of how the belugas are truly doing. For KNBA News, I'm Hannah Bissett.
It's summer camp season, but instead of gathering around a campfire, kids at Culinary Boot Camp gather around cutting boards and stand mixers. The University of Alaska Anchorage program teaches kids basic cooking techniques like knife skills and sanitation practices. The camp has been running for over 20 years, but this year it's more popular than ever. Alaska Public Media's Dev Hardikar has the story.
Kids in tall white chef hats bustle around the industrial kitchen carrying giant metal mixing bowls. The air hums with the sound of electric mixers. But one group is having a little trouble getting started.
Oh my!
What?
What? Oh, no. It's... Well, that's a problem.
Emmett Bartlett and Gabrielle Rhodes huddle around their mixer. They can't figure out how to attach the beater and accidentally spill sugar all across the counter. Baking instructor Reza Brown strides over to give them a hand.
You want to match it up with the groove that's in here, and then you want to lock it in.
Culinary Boot Camp is a summer program at UAA's Community and Technical College. Kids learn foundational cooking skills, starting with kitchen safety and sanitation practices. The instructors are professors from UAA's Culinary Arts program. They stick to easy baked goods and simple meals so the kids can focus on learning the process and tools of the kitchen. Today they're making lots of different cookies and brownies. Brown says working with younger kids is a nice change of pace.
We want them to be professional in what they do, so that's why we use simple recipes, but they are using adult equipment, and it's really cute because there's like little tiny 11-year-olds with gigantic bowls and spatulas, and I'm just like, oh my God, I love it so much.
The Culinary College is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. Every year, graduates head off to work as line cooks and head chefs. The summer camp started 2 decades ago to raise awareness for the college program. The dean, Raymond Weber, says it's also a way to teach members of the community important life skills. He says the kids are learning more than just how to cook.
They're going to learn the different steps by steps that can be used for almost anything if you think about it in life. If you can cook, you can measure, you can clean, you can coordinate, you can set up a plan, you can run through it. So these are just base level skills that indirectly influence everything a person does.
Culinary Boot Camp is open to a range of ages, from 11 to 17. It's also open to a range of skill levels. While some kids are just starting out, the camp is also an opportunity for more experienced kids to see what working in a professional kitchen is like. Kavika Kachadurian is busy sifting ingredients for snickerdoodles. He's 16 and already has experience baking. He says the camp is a great way to do what he loves in a more professional setting.
Everything's where it's supposed to be, and you have everything. So many times I've been baking, like pie crust or whatever, at my house, and I've been like, oh, we don't have flour.
Kavika says he's looking at UAA for college and might consider enrolling in the culinary arts program.
You sure this is the dry stuff?
Yeah.
On the other side of the room, Emmett and Gabrielle have their mixer working. They study their recipe sheet, reading it out loud together. They're making white chocolate chip cookies.
I thought we were making brownies.
Maybe.
No.
What?
I don't think so.
No, we're cooking.
Wait, oh. What?
It's okay. Well, you're going to be confused.
I'm good at making.
Yeah, that's why we're taking the class.
Yeah.
Get better.
Really? This is cookies?
Despite their professional surroundings, most of the kids are still figuring things out. And that's the point. It doesn't take long before Gabrielle and Emmett have a batch of white chocolate chip cookie dough ready for the oven. In Anchorage, I'm Dev Hardiker.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
Air travel disruptions mount ahead of the 4th of July holiday. I'm Novosafa with a Marketplace Minute. The busiest day for holiday travel is forecast to be tomorrow. Airlines delayed or canceled more than 2,000 flights so far today, tens of thousands since the weekend, mostly due to rough weather. The disruptions are concentrated along the East Coast and are expected to spread west. More corporate layoffs today. UBS is reportedly cutting tens of thousands of jobs at Credit Suisse, which it acquired in a government-arranged rescue. That could include workers in the bank's New York offices. Google is laying off workers at the mapping app Waze, which it acquired 10 years ago, no word on how many. And the Wall Street Journal says Ford is laying off at least 1,000 workers, including engineers. I'm Novosafa with the Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by JLL, providing commercial real estate leasing and management. JLL.com.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the 28th day of June, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 5:11. It will set again at 11:14. That will give us 18 hours and 3 minutes of glorious daylight. a loss of exactly 1 minute compared to yesterday. A record high for this date was 82 degrees, set in 1953 and then again in 1997, and a record low was 38, set in 1950. Currently 49 degrees, and the foggy mist has lifted a bit, more of a low overcast. However, officially, they don't have any more than 3 miles of visibility at the airport, where they also have 93% humidity and east winds to 7 miles per hour. The Weather Service is calling for a 20% chance of rain for the rest of the afternoon and tonight, 30% chance of rain for Thursday, and a 40% chance of rain for Friday. So those are your odds. Mostly cloudy skies through the period and light winds as well until Saturday or so. Calm winds becoming southeast today and turning to the south tonight and back to the southeast tomorrow. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up. That will happen at 3:54 this afternoon here on the east side and be 2.4 feet, followed by a high tide at 10:33 of 8 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 4:48 this afternoon and be a 4-foot tide in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 11:05 p.m. of 12.9 feet. Well, let's see what the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has to tell us.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 11, date issued 10 a.m. on June 27th. Cost recovery fisheries are scheduled to begin in Spearden Bay Special Harvest Area at noon Tuesday, June 27th, and the Spearden Bay Special Harvest Area will remain closed to common property fishing. Fishery opportunities in the Spearden Bay Special Harvest Area will depend on the ability to meet local aquaculture association needs, and all cost recovery information may be obtained by calling 486-6555. The Iqaluit Bay section of the Afognak District will close to commercial salmon fishing at 9 p.m. Wednesday, June 28th. And as previously announced, there will be a 57-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, June 27th to 9 p.m. Thursday, June 29th in the following areas. In the Cape Alatak, Humpy Deadman, Alatak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak District. And the following areas remain open until further notice. The Duck Bay section of the Afognak District and the Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Fishermen are reminded that in the Kodiak area, including the mainland district, until further notice, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse hand gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Closed waters are reduced until further notice in the following locations: in Fowl Bay to the stream terminus at Hidden Lake Creek, stream number 251406, and in Waterfall Bay to the stream terminus at Little Waterfall Creek, stream number 251822, and to the stream terminus at Big Waterfall Creek, stream number 251821. Other closed waters are shown of Kodiak area salmon statistical chart, detailed and commercial salmon fishing regulations, and statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game office. And of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record of phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
And mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. South winds to 15 knots for today and tonight with seas to 4 feet. For tomorrow, variable 10, seas to 4 feet. And for Friday, east 15, seas to 4 feet. Coming up to east 25 on Saturday, 9-foot seas. Over in the Shelikof Strait, variable 10 for today and tonight, and tomorrow too, 2-foot seas throughout that period. Northeast 15 on Friday with 3-foot seas, and Saturday and Sunday in the Shelikof, look for east winds to 25 knots and 6-foot seas. A little closer to home, here is your forecast for Chiniak Bay. Variable less than 10, becoming southeast 10 this afternoon with 3-foot seas. South 15 tonight, coming down to 10 knots after midnight and 2-foot seas. And for tomorrow, south 10, seas to 3 feet. For Friday, look for east winds to 10 knots and seas to 3 feet, and Saturday and Sunday in Chiniak Bay, southeast 20, with 7-foot seas. Up in Marmot Bay, variable 10, becoming southeast 10 this afternoon, 3-foot seas. Southeast 10 tonight with 3-foot seas, and southeast 10 tomorrow becoming east 15 in the afternoon with 3-foot seas. On Friday, east winds to 10 knots and seas to 3 feet, and Saturday and Sunday in Marmot Bay, southeast 20 with 7-foot seas. The Kodiak Island Borough School District summer food service program continues, but they won't be serving July 4th, next Tuesday. Breakfast is 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. and lunch is 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m., and that happens Monday through Thursday in the high school commons. It's for ages 18 and under, and everyone's free. If you need more information or you'd like to know about menus, call them at 907-486-7448. The big Chiniac 4th of July celebration parade is happening on Tuesday, July 4th. Everyone is to muster at the road's end lawn outside. The parade begins at 2, but the potluck starts at 12 noon. That will be held at the Chiniac Public Library. Bring a main dish, a salad, or dessert to share, and the parade route will go from Road's End to Silver Beach. Everyone's invited. Floats, tractors, four-wheelers, side-by-sides, bikes, horses, cars, walkers, marching bands, everyone. If you have any more questions, call Mo Butler at 539-2104.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.